Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Hope you are very well. We don't have a sponsor this week, so I will tell you and remind you that I'm doing all 12 of my one-man shows at the Leicester Square Theatre in August and September, starting on August the 7th, I think, and going right through to September the 12th, doing Talking Cock and Christ on a Bike, 12 Tasks of Hercules Terrace, Menage a Un, Someone Likes Jogger, Oh Fuck I'm 40, The Headmaster's Son, Hitler Moustache, Christ on a Bike, What is Love Anyway, We're All Going to Die, The Law of the Dance Settee, and Happy Now. You can get money off if you buy tickets for 3 shows or 6 shows or all 12 shows. You get for just £100 and you get a free T-shirt made by me if you come to every single one and you buy all tickets at the same time. Anyway, let us sit back and enjoy this week's Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with Roisin Conaty. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who this week genuinely nearly choked to death. Is Richard Herring! Thank you very much. I'm still here. Thank you. Oh, yeah. You're much better than last week's audience. I don't think you're much better than next week's audience as well. I'm going to go that far. So, welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Some cool people started calling it Rahalastapas. But the rest of people just call it Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or RHLSTP. That's if you're uncool, you can call it that. We've got one fantastic guest this week, then another fantastic guest next week, and it's going to be very exciting. I very nearly choked to death. I was eating an apricot. So I was a bit tired. I've got a young baby, as I'm sure you're aware, and I'm a bit tired all the time. I was eating an apricot. I'm not a vain man. I'd come back home one night and there were some apricots in Tesco Express, Tesco Metro. I thought, I've never seen fresh apricots. I'll buy those. Then the next day I was eating them and I just was a bit absent-minded doing something else. And I kind of ate the stone of the apricot.
as well as the apricot. And I realised I'd done it, and I felt it caught in my throat, and I thought I was genuinely thought I was going to choke to death and die. I was sort of retching, trying to get it up, but then I think I must have swallowed it, and then it just scraped against my uvula. It's not rude, it's the back of your throat. It's the thing at the back of your uvula. I don't know how you say it. So I did survive. But it was kind of a scary moment, because I thought, I don't really want to die choking on an apricot pit. That is quite an embarrassing way to die, because people will know I've been eating fresh apricots. That was the first. It's an embarrassing way to die. It's like, I don't eat apricots. It's like, oh, look at him eating apricots. He deserved to die. Who does he think he is? Peach is not good enough for him if he's going to have an exotic fruit. Oh, look at him eating his apricots. I was genuinely, as I thought I was dying, I was thinking this. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm leaving my child without a father. I was thinking, this is embarrassing. And then I was thinking, it's embarrassing for her that when people say, what does your dad do? She goes, oh, he's dead. They go, oh, no. And they go, how did he die? And she go, he choked to death on some fruit. People will laugh at that as you did, and then they go, what fruit was it? Someone will go, what? And it was an apricot. And then they go, oh. And there any pity she would have had, apricot. And then I thought I was safe, and then I googled apricot stones, and I found out that they contain cyanide. So I was but I would have had to accidentally eat all the other 8 apricots in my fridge and all their stones, and then accidentally gone to Tesco's and bought 80 more apricots and accidentally eaten all of those, and then I might have died. But it was I was trying to Google what animal eats apricot stones so I could be the old woman who swallowed a fly and swallowed whatever animal that was. But someone told me only dodos would do, which, I don't think I had time to genetically engineer this. I'm going to take some dodo DNA from that dodo in the Oxford Museum and then put it in a pigeon, which is what they're going to do, apparently, and then you can make a dodo, and then I could swallow the dodo, and then I'd be safe. I think I would have died by that time, so... It's embarrassing, wouldn't it? It'd be embarrassing to die like that. There was something else I was going to tell... Something very else exciting I was going to tell you about, but I'm not going to... I was in Ulverston at the weekend, which is in the Lake District, and... I went on the other week about how Middlesbrough is the most terrible place in the world. It is not. And Ulverston isn't the worst place in the world. It nearly is, but it isn't. But Barrow-in-Furness is the worst place in the world. I didn't even go there. I've been there before. But behind me on the train to Ulverston were two guys from Barrow who were very drunk at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and maybe not just drunk. And they were swearing and being weird, but kind of being friendly but threatening, to other people. You know, that kind of thing on the train where you don't want to look around in case they decide just to punch you to death. And what they were saying, one of them started saying, I love spliffs. And then this. I think they might have been smoking some spliffs. That's just reading between the lines. Just work that out. And then he said, it would be good. They were trying to become millionaires. They had working jobs, and they were kind of dreaming of becoming rich. And one of them said, the way everyone in the world could become rich is if everyone had top class grass, buds, they called it. If everyone grew just top class buds, then everyone in the world would be a billionaire, because they'd all have this fantastic drugs they'd all be able to sell and become billionaires. And his friend, who was a little bit cleverer than him, said, yeah, but if everyone had that, then no one would be a bit, you'd all have your own, you wouldn't be able to sell it, because everyone, let alone the fact that, of course, the economy wouldn't really work, that there wouldn't, it wouldn't produce more money, you'd only be able to sell a certain amount of anyway. And then the other one said, no, because you would have top class buds, so that would be fine. And then he said, yeah, but the other guys. So one of them, and then one of them did a really disgusting fart. I'm guessing it was the stupider one of the two. So that's been my week. So this week, I have to say, in the opening titles, people have paid good money to have these things said. It's from Mike Lamb. He doesn't ask for anything to be said, as Chris Evans says. Not that one. Not the one with the cock on his shoulder. So Chris Evans just says, why don't you call Mike Lamb a fucking idiot? Seems a bit rude. Thank you to Mike Lamb for the money for that, and the tension you've created after my brilliant warm-up. I'd really got the audience going with my brilliant warm-up material. So our guest today, she's probably best known from her appearance on the Angina Monologues. That's why you're all here tonight, to see... That we please welcome Roisin Conaty, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is. Thank you very much. Come on, sit down. Pick up a microphone.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks.
Thanks, good.
Got a bit of an itchy bum.
You got an itchy bum?
Yeah, that was happening backstage. See how we go.
what's causing the itch?
Is I don't know. It happened quite live. Yeah. Seconds ago this happened. Yeah. Is what it do piles the... feel like?
Piles? I have had a pile.
Yeah.
But it didn't really feel like anything. They can hurt.
Does it feel like you want to just rip your own arse off?
I'm sure some of anyone know about
so
that?
So I plan to start.
Yeah, have you wiped properly?
I know how to do stuff.
Is it on the anus or is it in the cleft?
It's easing off now, but I'm a little bit panicked by the severity of the itch.
Well, are there any arse doctors in the house? If anything goes, just let yourself know. And if there's anyone, if she goes down, holding, clutching her arse. Well, what was the angina monologues that we are most famous for? What is that?
The angina monologues was that, it was really good. It was... Victoria Wood put on a gig for British Heart Foundation and to raise awareness that angina is the biggest killer of women in this country. So it's a nice opener, Rich.
I knew it was going to be a risk.
But I got to meet Victoria Wood, and that was incredible, and Joe Brand. It was a really great night. I wore heels on stage, though, and it really affected my gig. I had a nice one, but I felt it. Like, I put really big, ridiculous heels.
Yeah.
Yeah,
how was your ass on that gig? Was it fine?
Just itch free. Just completely itch
free. Maybe that's it. If you're distracted by the heels, that takes your mind off the.
Well, you think I've consistently got an itchy ass, but I just don't notice.
I often do. You know, I think when you get into your 40s, you'll find out it is. You know, when I had a pile in the because I was having there was some blood in some blood.
Jesus.
When I wiped my bum, there was some blood.
Right.
Let's just start off by being open as we can.
Yeah, come on.
I feel I just have to take out the embarrassment of the start by saying something more embarrassing. There was some blood, so I was worried that I had arse cancer.
Right. Yeah.
And then this young nurse, a young doctor, had to look into my arse. I had to lie down and she had to put her finger into my arse and she said, "I'm sorry about this." And I said, "Well, I feel much worse for you. This is from your point of view. This is an awful. You're having to put your finger in the arse of a horrible old man who's got blood coming out of his arse." It was just. I mean, it was.
So you just narrated the whole thing for her. She just thought it's fine. Then she's doing. She's like, "This is awful. You're right."
But it's fun. They go away apparently. Then when you die, they go away. So you are probably best known, really. You won the Best Newcomer Award for stand-up in 2010.
Yes, I did.
So what have you done since then? Nothing.
Not a lot. Just weight fluctuations, really. that was a nice day out. What did you say about that? It was good for me.
You're one of only five.
I enjoyed it, you know.
You're one of only five women to have won an Edinburgh Fringe Award, I think, from the Edinburgh Award, or maybe the full award.
I won the newcomer, yes. Yeah, so yeah.
But that's included over both things, I think.
There's a lot. There'll be a lot more now. I think I think Bridget winning the main and Sarah Pascoe getting nominated. Josie's been nominated a billion times. There's like loads of I think it was just those first 20 years of the award were pretty tricky.
It's all the good people are women now. That's definitely true. But luckily angina will kill most of them. So my place in the comedy firmament is secure. So I'm very, as long as I do. It was a kind of joke. So I've noticed a lot of your comedy things have a theme of being invited back to your school to do a talk. Is this a thing that genuinely happened?
It did genuinely happen.
So you after you'd won the award, presumably.
I didn't go back to the school though.
No.
I did get invited back to the school. Yeah, and I am going back now this year. I did before I did my first Edinburgh show. I'd sort of gone through I'd been doing comedy on and off for a while, good few years, and I'd had a break up and I moved back to my mum's and I had a shitty job. And I did my first Edinburgh show, but it was like, that sort of just awful time in your life. Like, I literally had, £3 in my bank or something, and I got an invite to go and give a speech to the girls at my school to sort of tell them about how successful I was. And it was just, it nearly gave me a breakdown, but then it gave me an Edinburgh show. It was a real kind of... I suppose it's that thing with what some people can perceive. If you're doing comedy and it sounds like you're doing well, if they sort of go, "I saw you at a gig," and da-da-da, and I was doing really badly. I was pretty depressed, actually.
Because there's a scene in Game Face, which is the comedy pilot you did for Channel 4. It's about being a single woman and not being...
Yeah, I was trying to do that. It was going to be about being... I was going to sort of make her more similar to me, but heightened, like, you know, more like Louis, like a comedian, sort of. And then we sort of agreed on an actress, so it wasn't so self-referential, the whole thing. Comedy's so overtaking in you know, like the world itself. And then it was quite interesting. Then the channel, like a few days before we filmed it, was sort of like, oh, she can't be an actress. And I was like, what? The whole scenes are about her. Otherwise, she's crazy. Yeah. You know, she's just, someone said, I'm an actress. And so we put a sort of scene in that she was a postman that I sort of had to write like in a day that sort of, she had this other, and it just sort of leveled out. So yeah, I wanted that point in your life, you know, before, you know, when you're sort of in your 20s and you choose a career, and then there's a point, so I think when you get to 30, you know, you think, how is this going? Am I a comedian? Or do I just say it a lot? So it's sort of that. I wanted it to sort of that point in your life where, and I think there's not a lot of stuff about, she's single, but I don't think that's what I know, because I've been single for so long. But I think just a grown adult woman who's sort of as worried about as all the other things in life as men are, you know, of, you know, friendships, family, you know, and just not being where she wants to be.
It's very funny.
With jokes.
You can see it. It's still up online because I watched it.
It's up online, yeah, watch it. It's got some good bits in it.
Did you refilm it? Did you do them as a short thing and then refilm it as a whole episode?
We did blaps. They commissioned blaps and then we filmed the blaps and then I went in, they called me in for a meeting and it was very, very well done the way they commissioned the pilot. It went, we're not putting the blaps out. And I was like, why? It's like, we're giving you a pilot. It was really a nice day. So we did the blaps. The blaps are still online and the pilot's still online. So, right, yeah.
Because it's slightly, there's different Diane Morgans in one of them and not in the other one.
Yeah, I don't think Diane was available for the other one. Yeah, so, but they're all, you know, Carrie Ad's in it. There was such a Mike Wozniak from Man Down's in it without a Tash because we realised it was madness having the same characters. Because in the blaps, we just thought they were just going to be online. And then the sort of pilot went out and it was a bit ridiculous having two of the lead characters from another series.
So you thought, if you shave off his moustache, no one will know.
Yeah.
Did he mind shaving off his moustache? He has a very fine moustache.
He didn't mind. The thing is, though, because I don't know if you might want to play, he's a really brilliant stand-up, and he's a really great actor, but he always has a big moustache. But because you're not used to seeing someone's mouth, to me, it just like he was pouting the whole time. So I just, every time I saw it, it was like, hello, Roisin. I was like, oh my God, so much lip.
Well, you are in Man Down as well, which I think is a fantastic sitcom.
Yeah, it's really fun.
We've had
fun.
Greg and Mike, in fact, on the podcast before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a real... I wrote an episode of Man Down for this second series.
You did.
They didn't use any of it.
To be fair, one of the leads did die.
One of the characters died. The character I mainly wrote for, because I thought, this is exciting, I get to write for Rick Mayall. I was the main victim of Rick Mayall's death, I have to say. I was on the toilet when I heard Rick Mayall had died, because I was on Twitter, which seemed kind of apt in a way.
Yeah.
I was so unhappy, and then I went, and oh no. Which is better than when Rod Hull died, because when Rod Hull died, we were on the set of This Morning, Rich Not Judy, doing the rehearsal for it, and we'd done a whole another load of sketches. We had a character who was pretending to be Rod Hull, and in these sketches we'd already filmed, he would die at the end of every sketch.
Oh, God.
And someone came into as we were rehearsing and said, there's news coming in. I don't know if it's true that Rod Hull has died. And my first thought was, oh no, we've there. What about the sketches? And then it was, that's sad that the man I know has died. So yeah, I was, it seems to be working okay though. I mean, without Rick, I thought it would make a big difference to the second series, but it seems to sort of still...
I think it's reshaped itself. Yeah. It's sort of morphed into something else a bit. I think, you know, I think Greg, you know, what do I say too much, but he, you know, had written with people written the series last year and then had to rewrite it when Rick died. And he had a really hard, awful year, but, you know, I think like his actual dad died. And then, so we were sort of writing this script at the same time. It was just all gross.
Yeah.
And then I think Stephanie Cole, he wanted someone, I think she's so amazing and so brilliant, and she's as big as the character, that void. But I think the shape of the show's changed a bit, and for the better.
Yeah.
I think it's really found, like, I think Greg wouldn't mind me saying this, for the pilot wasn't the best thing of the show. You know, it was a kind of, it was still finding its feet. And it, like I said, the second, third episode in the first series, it starts getting good, really good. And then this series, I think it's really found its kind of, you know, voice. It's the beats of it are there, and it's it and even though Rick obviously was amazing in the first series, and you'd have Rick in every, you know, every shape, but the I think just structurally the show has sort of made it not so that, you know, because you think Rick Mayall's not going to be in it, we might as well cancel, you know, sort of that feeling of like he's such a void. But I think he's sort of just changed the shape of the show so that there isn't this gaping void.
I mean, it's an interesting sitcom, and so I think there's been a lot of realistic sitcoms, and this sitcom is kind of crazy, and it's just full of craziness, and then just things that are just stupidly, and they're flicking sweets at a cow, and you know, because they're just they you can't see why they'd be so funny. And the episode where the where he's having sex with the girl who likes greengrocers.
Oh, shit.
It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
There's lots of big set pieces. And on the page, I think, God, where are we filming this? Some of them are like, but you know, kind of, we're in the woods for the, like in the last episode, it looks like there's a photo where I'm like in a wedding gown, and it looks like The Wizard of Oz. Like, it doesn't look like a modern British sitcom. It looks like something otherworldly. So much fun to film. It's a real, you know, we really do laugh quite a lot. There's a lot of madness, and just watching the set pieces, they're just insane.
Is there another series of Man Down coming down? If there isn't one?
I would be surprised if there's not. Okay. I don't know anything, but I would be surprised if there's not. I think it's done well, and I think I think the people who like it really, really like it. You know, it's one of those ones.
Did you get to? You didn't get to work that much with Rick on the show. Did you meet him?
I met him quite a lot. Yeah. You know, because it was quite a, you know, intimate sort of cast. No, he was such a lovely, lovely, lovely man. One of the weirdest things, on the first day I came on set, I hadn't met him on the pilot, and I came on set for the series, and I had to do a pickup that we hadn't got in the pilot. That was all I was coming on to do, which was me being asleep in a bed that was sort of just with shoes on. And I got on set, and Rick Mayall was downstairs looking at his lines, and it was the bit, I don't know, it's a poem he reads to Dan when he's asleep. It's a Shakespeare bit, but it was like, oh God, I can't remember. but it's like, why to sleep, why to dream, you know, something, whatever, but one of those ones. And he sort of, he comes up to me and he went, what do you think about these lines? What do you think they mean? He's really intense. He's a proper actor. And I was like, I'm not drama trained, you know? And I was like, and then he said like about five different versions. And I sort of, all I did was confirm what he said. I'm not going to say, you know, I was like, yeah, I think you're right. And he went, So we get upstairs. I haven't even met, like, some of the, you know, like, a lot of the senior crew and stuff. And I'm in the bed and waiting for the scene. Like, roll in, and where's Rick? And then Rick comes in and goes, I've been speaking to Rasheen. I'm going to do it completely differently. I was just like, what the fuck? I didn't tell him to do anything completely different. But he did it, he did it. But just hearing that as my opening, yeah, he was a really lovely, really sweet, funny man. Like, genuinely a nice guy. And made, he could be quite firm when he wanted to do things his way. And I haven't made a lot of television, you know, sort of, and especially narrative is my first thing. And then when you watch on the monitors, you realise he was always right. And that was quite weird. I was like, oh, he's just annoyed because he's right. Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, Rick Mayall's right. Every time he's going mental, it's because he's right.
Oh. Cool. So... it still makes me sad. That's the shame. But there we go. Yeah. I'm such a massive fan. You're a bit younger than me, so I think.
But it's still, it was just, you know, as a child, to see even glimpses of that, you know, it was just one of those. You can't grow up in this country and not, I think, be affected by Rick Mayall, especially if you like comedy.
Yeah, sure. Is it true you've got 80 first cousins, or is that a joke?
Sure is.
80?
Yeah.
That's not possible. Simply not possible.
It is possible.
Mathematically impossible.
My mum's got 12 sisters.
What?
And one brother. And my dad's got 5 sisters and 5 brothers. And they're Irish.
Is it difficult for birthdays and stuff? Can you remember the names of all 80 of your first cousins?
No.
Have you ever been in the same room as each other?
No, because they're sort of combined families, you know, sort of from my... They wouldn't be in the same rooms. But... Even my mum's side was probably, you know, about 40. I'd say a bit more, probably 40 or 50. And at a wedding, there's just a lot of people who just sort of vaguely look like you. And you sort of go, hello. And obviously people grow up. And so, you know, when you're in your 20s and you see all these, you know, 12-year-olds, and then you show up again and they're like 20 and you're like, "Who? I don't know who this is. A woman's here now." Because in your head you go, store that, you know, whatever. But I know most of them. There's just a few of them that I sort of think, oh God, I'm going to balls this up. And, you know, they're going to be upset. They're going to be
can't
like,
just go, hey, cuz, how are you doing?
I mean, it's literally what I do.
Yeah, it's good. Hey. So now they know which ones, if they're watching this. I happen to know most of your cousins are fans of this. A lot of them have been in touch.
They are, they're all comedy nerds. But yeah, it's a big old Irish family. It's mental. Yeah.
Blimey, 80 cousins. That's insane. I'll ask you an emergency question to get away from this this awful... I've got a new one. Do you think if you have sex with a robot, that should count as cheating on your partner?
Yes.
Do you?
It's the future, mate. It's just we're all going to be having sex with robots. We've got to start legislating for it.
I think you've got to be... You know, so, like, if you have sex with a toilet roll, is that cheating on your partner?
That just means you've got bad... That just means you've got bad taste.
It's just an object. It's just like it's an intricate dildo. That's all that is.
What, the toilet roll or the
robot?
Right.
The toilet roll is a rudimentary dildo.
I think the future is this. I think the robots, in future, we're going to have where we're not going to have to meet each other as humans, because robots are going to be so good and in tune to us and register our moods and say all the things that we're, you know, that
it's
we need
great.
To hear. Yeah, and so it's fine. We're just, you know, it's just not...
And they'll all look like the robot off of that Channel 4 thing, and then we can just have sex with them. I said this to my wife, and my wife said it would count as cheating if I had sex with the robot That's ridiculous.
It was
not
you
a person.
You
just,
wouldn't want to have sex with a robot unless you.
I want to have sex with that robot.
You want to have sex with a robot who you're able to respond to as a human. Don't try and get out of it. Stick to the
what
toilet.
What if I don't respond to as a human? It's as a human. Sorry, it's just a robot. I'm not responding. I won't care for its needs. I can do that easily.
Would you have sex with a Mac computer?
Well, my Mac computer is currently broken because an unguent spilled on the keyboard. It was some cleaning fluid, but, you know, probably the thing that was on there that was cleaning off. you know, but that's interesting, isn't it? Because if you watch pornography on a computer, which I would never do after talking to Louis Theroux last week about... pornography, yeah. That's a callback. Then, you know, you're having sex with... You're watching images of other people having sex, you're enjoying other people having sex, so is it any different having sex? I think it's an interesting moral conundrum.
I think your eyes looking at something and your dick being in something are very different things. And they are the rules that this world has stood by. We stand by that you can look and not touch. That's sort of the... I think they're... Okay. You know, and I think once you... Just see, like, if you walk in and see your partner, you know, having sex with a machine, you're going to go, oh, thank God, it's just the robot.
It's a brave new world. That's all I can say.
It's a terrifying new world.
What I liked is that me and my wife had a serious argument about it. Like, because it's not going to happen.
But in our lifetime, I reckon it will.
I don't think it will happen.
I reckon it will. In about 50 years, there'll be like really hot robots.
When I'm 97, fuck you. When I'm 97, I don't care.
Then
I don't care what my wife says. What, are you going to divorce me? Come on, bring it on. I think it'd be good. I think we need to have friends who are robots. It'd be nice just create robots that like you and you are interested in things you're interested in. I mean, it's like at the moment you have to have a baby to do that. You have a baby and then that's a friend. That's, you've got a friend. That, that's the only way I could get a friend. But now I don't have to even have sex. I could just have a robot.
I don't think robots are the... I think you need to work through your robot fetish. Yeah. I don't think they're the way forward. I think they're a sort of, you know, a decoy. They're a thing that you know, it's like when people buy hats.
Very similar to that.
Deal with the problem. Yeah. Whatever's going on in your life, deal with that. The hat isn't going to solve it. And that's what I think with robots.
I'd be worried about the chafing as well, because from the robot, having sex with the robot...
But they won't chafe. They'll have all this nerve endings, and they'll do all this stuff.
There's still going to be a metal like hip in there or something.
Robots are nearly. Artificial intelligence is going to be really big in our lifetime. They're going to have like soft spots, as the scientists call them.
What if it gets a short circuit? That'd be quite good. Saw an episode of Hello, Hello where that happened today, and I just now I think about it. Good. Oh, that's a new emergency question. That's coming out every single week from now on. If you had to assassinate a... have you ever had the opportunity to assassinate a public figure? And who was it? Or do you look back and regret? I saw Michael Gove in a shopping centre the other day without any security, just his children.
Oh, God.
I realised I could have smashed a glass bottle into his face.
Yeah.
Have you ever had the opportunity? Because, like, so as a comedian, like, in fact, with Greg, I was in Buckingham Palace with Greg Davies. We both ended up getting invited to dinner with Princess Anne quite recently.
Did you talk to her about your robots?
I wanted.
Sorry, Princess. Do you think
it was a month after my baby had been born, and I was kind of at the point I was obsessed with thinking everyone was once a baby, and that everyone had emerged. And I've got this horrible image of my baby emerging from my wife, and I was thinking that happened to everyone. And I had this image as I was looking at Princess Anne of her emerging out of the Queen's vagina. So I didn't bring that up. I didn't say, "Oh, Princess Anne, you've come out of the Queen's." I have too much respect to say it. But I could have killed Princess Anne. Stephen Hawkins was there, could have done him.
Are you just saying who have I been around that's famous?
Yeah, well, but then you realise I could have killed them easily.
Quite a lot of comedians.
Yeah. Do you wish you had? Which ones did you wish you
oh,
would
no,
have killed?
Oh, no, I don't want to kill any comedians. They're my friends. Have I been in a room with famous people? Stephen Hawking. I've been in a room with Stephen Hawking. I don't want to kill Stephen Hawking.
Be easy though, wouldn't it? That's the thing with him.
Richard,
it would
Herring.
Take him a minute to say get off as well. That's the thing. It takes him ages. You could go. He does it by winking.
You do not want to be the guy who kills
him. He's an incredible man.
You don't want to be the guy that kills Stephen Hawking. That is not a good kill.
No.
That is a really bad fucking kill.
But if I'd killed Michael Gove...
Fine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure the law would have seen that. The legal system might have seen it differently.
I think they'd give you a couple of minutes. They'd listen to you for a couple of minutes. No one's listening to you if you kill Stephen Hawking, mate.
It's fine. So, let me get back. I'll get back to the proper real questions. You believe in astrology? You base 80% of your life decisions on astrology. Is that true?
Intellectually, I know it's horseshit, yeah. But I still read them relentlessly.
And do you act upon what they tell you to do?
Do you know what? I don't act upon what they tell me to do, but I do sort of... because I've sort of read it from a young age. It's a bit like being brainwashed. So I do have ideas about star signs and... they're not healthy, I don't think. Like, so someone will say they're a star sign. Like, say... can I say this? Yeah. Like, if it's a romantic thing, I've literally been like, and I have to question them. Like, what are you doing? Like, that's madness. But right. I know it's rubbish, but it's just a thing I enjoy. I like the idea of someone knowing the future. It's just a thing for to cure anxiety, I think. Like, what's going to happen?
I think it makes me more anxious. The idea that everything's fated and worked out in advance... makes me more anxious than the idea that knowing that anything can happen.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, well, if it's all written and it's all going to happen, it doesn't matter what you do, does it? Because it's going to happen anyway. But if the world is, you know, the future is an unknowable thing, which surely it has to be.
But you're quite you're positive. I think I'm quite like, what's going to happen? And I want a heads up, you know, sort of that sort of feeling of. And I know it's rubbish. I know. I genuinely know it's rubbish. I would never say to someone like, "Well, tell you what, you know, astrology actually is very real." And I don't talk in that voice either. But I do. I think, like, I go to a fortune teller whenever I go abroad and stuff like that. I'm always, I've got one side of myself and the other side of myself going, "Find out what they know."
And the fortune teller's ever told you stuff that's been right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's why you go, because they sort of, the good ones know how to exactly, you know, what to, they say a thing that you go, there's no way they could have known that. And you just go, that's the law of, you know, your brain that isn't mad sort of goes, of course they could know that. It's quite easy for them to know anything, you know. They've said nothing, I've never been told anything. I went to one in the States, I did a road trip in the States. So I went in and all she asked was my name, and then she said, you should talk for a living. And so first thing she said to me, and I was like, okay. And then, so she said some things that I was quite, sort of laying your cards on the table, for no backing out from them sort of things. But, you know, it's just, you can tell anyone you should talk for a living. It's like, yeah. Anyone else believe in the old telling the future?
Not my, no one would hear. No one. That. No one will. No one, not amongst my friends. They're not allowed in. I, I put it in all the star sign things to in the papers. I say, do not go and see Rich Haynes Escape. I pay Russell Grant to say that to everyone. Oh, and the other thing I was going to say about Game Face, there's a brilliant scene in it with Brian Harvey.
Yes.
How did you persuade Brian Harvey to come on and do a bit in which he looks at some baked potatoes really lovingly, and then you go, you say, he's had one already, and you say, come on, Brian, you're driving. And then how did you persuade him? He does it very well, and he's very good.
I think what it was he sort of was able to participate in the joke.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like sort of a joke at him. It was sort of he sort of does this, you know, looks at the potato and he's like, you know, trying to eat more potatoes. I think he said he'd been asked quite a lot, you know, sort of stuff, you know, he just said, I found it, thought it was funny. And then it was quite, and he was lovely. And I think it was, I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to sort of.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You know, be horrible to him. I was like, if he can make it funny and he can participate, it's fine, rather than sort of, it's just not what I feel comfortable with. And I think he found it quite funny. And we found a way to make a sort of ridiculous thing silly. And it was just, you know, he just, I think that's why he did it. He just wanted to, he thought it was, because he could act and do a little bit. He's a really nice man. Mad.
Were you a fan of his when you were younger?
Honestly, yeah, I was a fan of all the boy bands up to the age of about 15. And Brian, E17, were one of my, one of my big ones. Take that, and E17.
Yeah.
Real obsessive.
When I presented Top of the Pops, I presented Top of the Pops twice. I'm not a paedophile, but I did it twice, and E17 were on, and I met Brian Harvey in the canteen, and he was. We did a joke about him on the actual thing, because he was eating a king size bag of Maltesers, and he was talking to. I think he was talking to the producer of Top of the Pops. He said he wasn't a millionaire, and she said, "Oh, we just met." Met Brian Harvey in the canteen. He says he's not a millionaire, but I notice he's eating a king size packet of Maltese. So they were, yeah.
He was a bit. He was really nice. He was very, you know, kind of. He's working on a. He's trying to pitch this thing. It's like I don't know if he's still doing it, but he was talking about this sort of reality TV show where he's sort of making music with someone, and it was like almost like, you know, like Towie, but in Walthamstow. But he showed me a thing that he'd made, and you know, there's an you know when you don't know anyone, if anyone shows you anything they've made, there's a terror that's going to be the worst thing you've ever seen, and you've got to sort of get your face ready, you know, like your lying face. And he showed me, but it was like for those kind of shows, I'm not into them, but it was really, I was like, it was really good. I was like, oh, that's fine, yeah, I'd totally watch that. So he's trying to do stuff, and I think he's an interesting man. Sweet. Yeah. And just sweet. He was really nice on set. He wasn't at all, you know, really into the cameras. Like, well, that's a blah, blah, got that. And all that sort of chat.
Have you ever met the two guys who stood at the back in E17 and did that? Have you ever met them?
Terry Caldwell and John. Yeah, of course I have. I met Terry Caldwell. Was it?
That's a good job for them for a few years, isn't it?
Did I meet Terry at that gig? Oh yeah, I'll tell you where I met Terry. This is quite an embarrassing story. We did a gig. It was I've got no memory. It was some festival, and it was a massive tent, a ridiculously way too big. You know, like a tent thing. Tent. And we were doing stand up and stuff. And then in the other tent, there was Terry. It's not, it was like Terry Alderton, it's Terry Caldwell.
Yeah.
Terry Caldwell was singing with this guy, and I was like, that's the guy from East 17. And then we got, it was me and Fordy, Matt Ford, Paul McCaffrey, comics, and we just got incredibly drunk. And at the end of the night, we all got on stage with Terry Caldwell, and it's quite. And bear in mind, there'd only been comedy in this tent. So there's no reason for this to happen. They don't understand. We're just very drunk and think it'll be funny. We just bring them all on. Terry called one, this other guy. And we just start singing House of Love. You know, yeah. The everybody. no one recognises Terry. And we're just all drunk on stage. I was on stage about Paul McCaffrey's wife. We're on stage for about 2 minutes. And it was like a real awful shaming. And I saw some girl in the audience. I did a show called Impractical Jokers. And she thought it was a forfeit.
Right.
She was like, this is obviously a forfeit. And I was like, oh no, we're just doing this of our own volition.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Feel sorry for those guys from East 17. I could have been an East 17. How many members of East 17 does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know.
Four. One to have the idea to change a light bulb, one to change a light bulb, and two to stand at the back going like that, knowing in their hearts that their lives are meaningless.
As are all lives.
Not according to astrology.
No, not mine.
What's going to happen in the future to you?
I've been easing off it because I read this woman called Susan Miller. She's like the big dog in the astrological world. You laugh. She is huge. People go absolutely batshit. She's not out on the first of the month. She pretty much gets death threats. People are like, how am I meant to live, Susan? They go nuts. Like, you know, and she's... But last couple of ones, she said, have been almost like threats. They were like, oh, you know, really, like, she's obviously trying to up it. They're like, good luck today, mate. It's stuff like that. And like, they did actually make me edgy. I was like, why would you say that? It was, I was traveling, I was going somewhere. And it was sort of like your family are going to die. That was implied. It was genuinely like, oh, maybe a relative isn't well. Or, you know, and then it was like, death was, it was really, and so I was a bit like, exactly what you said. It did make me sort of go, actually, this is making me, quite sad.
Yeah.
Something bad's gonna happen.
I can imagine those things. I can imagine bad things happening without someone telling me about them. That's what I'm discovering, having people to be responsible for. It was good when I was single and had no one to care for or love. Then you could just get on with your life. If you die, it doesn't matter, does it? It's over. But now you've got...
Oh, thanks!
Now you've got... Once, so I'm saying,
this horse shit I've got to listen to.
Stay single, because it's when you love people, and then when, especially when there's a little baby...
I do love people!
When you have to care for it.
I have people who love me. People, I will be noticed if I die.
It's just terrifying to think what could happen to them, and then how bad you would think if something bad happened. So, you know, what I'd say is don't have any children.
Thanks, Rich.
That's all right. Have you ever nearly choked to death on anything?
Loads. I've got a really narrow esophagus.
Have you?
I'm all mouth, like literally. Yeah. And I realised it's...
Tell me more.
When I first saw myself on television, like, you know, it's always awful seeing yourself. You know, I had braces when I was 15 and my teeth got straight. And then I had 8 wisdom teeth. One in every 10,000 people get them, normally black people. And had them all taken out. And then...
Yeah, 8 wisdom teeth.
Yeah, the British Dental Board.
That's double the...
Yeah, the British Dental Board took them out.
Yeah.
They came down to watch.
Are they in a museum
always
somewhere?
On stage. But yeah, so I basically I realised I sort of all my I've got a big bit here and I had an endoscopy and they choose a child's one.
Yeah.
And all my words, so I speak like this because all my come out like that and then they all choke out the front.
Right.
It's very boring, but yeah, so I've got a really narrow esophagus. Yeah. I have an endoscopy.
So you often choke on things.
Yeah, yeah, and I eat so fast. My mum, she's Irish. Her favourite thing to say to me is, "Jesus, the famine is over." I'm like. Blah, blah, blah.
I thought, well, I had a brother and a sister, and I always, you know, food went quickly. So if you've got 8 cousins, no wonder you eat. You've got to eat.
Exactly.
If there's a French fancy on the table.
Yeah, get it down, yeah. I've choked. What's the worst I've choked on? Rocket. Fucking killer. That moment where it's down and in your mouth. You're I'm like, which way should I go? Should I pull it out like a magician? Or should I try and drown it? Like,
the rocket's quite... But, you know, it's in the moment as I was choking on this apricot stone, just how embarrassed. I was just embarrassed. I wasn't scared of dying. I was just embarrassed that was the way I was going to. It's such a stupid way to die. Just think I've eaten deliberately, you know, without paying attention.
But isn't there something about the stupid ways to die? At least there's sort of, there's a nobility in it.
No.
You just went out on a simple thing, got him. It's a nice sort of like, rather than a long, tedious death, you just went, oh, the apricot, who knew?
I think I found it very embarrassing and, you know, and a waste of my precious life. I think I've got a lot more to give to the world. And, you know, when you think about how long it's taken for us to get here, you know, not just that, you know, it's billions of years of the Big Bang and all this stuff happening, and then you exist, and then you choke to death on an apricot stone. Just a bit of a waste, isn't it?
But I don't think, whatever way that our story ends, you can always use that story to be like, what a fucking waste. You know, like all of that, you know, why did I bother learning to read if you were just going to kill me? sort of, you know, I think it all can be a bit.
I want to die a kind of heroic death, you know, like jumping on a hand grenade or something and saving a school of children. I'll probably have to go into a school with a hand grenade and throw it for that to happen.
He never got over that apricot thing, did he? Absolutely.
If you go into a school with a hand grenade and throw it and then jump on it, do you think at any point anyone thinks you're a hero? Goes, well, it was bad that he brought the hand grenade in and threw it at the kids. But he did at least jump on it, and only a few of the kids were hurt by his bones flying into their face.
I think you'd probably get like some people be grateful that you didn't kill them all.
Yeah.
But most people would think you're a lunatic.
I think it'd be bad, you know, it'd be frowned on. Generally frowned on.
Frowned on is one of my favourite expressions. Like, the idea is so terrifying. Like, yeah, frowning at you.
If you had to choose, you're a single lady. If you had to choose between dating a man who was a 6 foot tall penis, just he had no arms or legs, it's just a massive penis, he has a face on his helmet, or a man who, instead of having a penis, has a tiny man where his penis should be, which of those two things would you prefer? You are welcome to ask some other questions if you.
Basically, what I've got is, this is not. The man with a tiny man there is effectively got the best penis ever. Because he's got the man shape. He's the man, the torso and the legs are the penis shape. Then he's also got extra bits. It's no brainer. Definitely have the little man down
the little
there.
Man. Wouldn't you feel guilty about the little man if you were ever...
No, he'd have a whale of a time. I'll treat him right. he'll be all right. He'll be, you know, kind of, and he can save. He can, you know, he can sort of be like, he can check as well. It's like a health thing.
Oh, this esophagus is very tight. Yeah. You should.
No more smears. Just a little man going, something different.
Good to know.
I'd definitely have him. Yeah.
If your finger could travel through time, where would you send it to and what would it do? Just
Ooh.
Your finger. It can go anywhere in time and space, the past, future, or the present. But I would say using it to go to the present would be a waste of time. But actually, if you could send it somewhere else in the present, that would still be
my
right.
My finger go through time.
Could go, and you can just alter history or the future or just point at something, tickle someone.
God, what would I do?
It's a hard question, isn't it? Not many people would have asked that to you before. That's what, sometimes it's tricky.
Maybe. See, you could go back and you go, like, you know, the gun on Hitler, you know, or something. But you could also just go and really fuck someone up. Just sort of repeatedly tickle someone on the chin.
Yeah.
Who, though?
It's good. I'm glad you're considering this at such length, because it is an important question.
The thing is, I don't want to go too far back, because I've got very, very strong sense of smell, and I think everyone would stink.
Your nose isn't going anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, mate, the things I'm going to make you do. As long as I haven't got to be there. Maybe I would... What could I do? I'm scared I won't choose the right thing.
It's good to think about it now, because if you ever get this opportunity, it'll probably be a
I'd do something.
Thing.
This is me being very noble. I'd do something like this, either the Hitler thing or like the nuclear bomb thing, or so like change the maths on it so it didn't work.
Okay.
So like, oh, this worked yesterday. Well, the maths are gone now, mate. or I would.
So what? The nuclear bomb wouldn't blow up Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
As they're about to build, as about to build it.
Okay.
And they're about to go, it's all done, isn't it? It's all nearly ready. And the most important part of the equation, I'd fuck up.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, oh, it didn't work. Yeah.
And then the Second World War would have gone on a long time and millions of people would have been killed as a result of your... And someone else, Hitler's scientists, would have had time to nuclear bomb together.
How many times can I go back with this finger?
Well, just once, otherwise it's insane. You're going to change everything.
I'd go back and I would kill Hitler.
Okay.
Standard.
At what point would you kill Hitler? As a baby, kill his parents.
I wouldn't. I'd kill him.
Joking. I wouldn't kill him.
No, I'd let him get born. I'd probably kill him. I'd probably kill him when he was still drawing. When he was painting.
Can you just encourage him with your finger to stay in art rather than go over to?
Well, like point him that way. Yeah. Every time he says something anti-Semitic, I don't think so.
Probably better to kill him, just to be on the safe with him. Your finger.
This finger isn't working. I should just kill him.
If you could choose between having a tit that dispensed talcum powder... Oh, no, that's a stupid one to ask, because that's just asked that question. Or a hand made out of ham. Yeah, that's brilliant. I rescued myself by changing
hand
the question.
Hand made out of ham?
Yeah, or a tit that dispenses talcum powder as much as you want.
That's, I mean, not appealing at all.
No.
No, talcum powder is something from the 80s, I think. I don't know why people used it. It's an insane thing. Do you still use talcum powder?
No, of course not.
What was it? It was like we were too... Talcum powder is a thing where I think it's just the parents that want to dry their kids.
Yeah.
Which was like, yeah, dry yourself in powder. So definitely not. And I definitely out my boob. It made me feel really sad. Like I think it was like milk not being used. Like, bleh, dust. I mean, no one wants to see actual dust leaving a part of their body. The hand made out of ham. This is problematic. If it's smoked, I don't mind.
Yeah.
But I hate unsmoked pork.
Okay.
Now.
I disagree with you on that, but that you're allowed to have that opinion. I had smoky bacon at the bed and breakfast I was in Ulverston. I don't like it.
I mean, you can't. It's the only way to eat bacon.
No.
You have unsmoked bacon.
Yeah.
I can smell the pig when I have unsmoked. Literally, I feel like I can smell the animal.
That's kind of what I like about it. I like to know I'm eating some animal rather than some smoke.
I love smoked bacon.
Just eat smoke.
I would eat smoke if I could.
You can.
You can't eat smoke.
You can. Just get some smoke, put your face in it.
Smoked cheese I like as well.
Yeah.
I like smoked things. I'd have a hand made of ham. I mean, listen, the problem is it's going to go off.
No, it won't. It's because it's part of you. It'll stay good. You can eat it, but it'll grow back. But only a little bit.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I'd have that. I'd have the hand made of ham and I'd draw nails on it so that if I wanted to blend in and have a normal day, I would just have nails and I'd try and make it and I'd put fake tan on it to make it look like a normal hand. But if I wanted a bit of attention, I'd be like, yeah, I'm the hand made of ham girl. And I'd write a really great Edinburgh show about it.
Would you be able to do that?
The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh.
Or other such ones.
It's good. That's too classy a reference for my...
Yeah.
They don't like literature. They like they like maths here. They're still reeling from you trying to change.
Oh, I must be their favourite. Have you seen me on Countdown?
Oh, yes, you're on Countdown.
Worst ever. I'm the worst ever person who's on Cat's Countdown, yeah. Oh. In terms of results. Well, not as a human being.
I don't think anyone's really trying to... No one's really trying to win
I'm
it,
I'm fucking trying, Rich.
You also did a darts thing for Comic Relief.
I did.
How did you get on that?
You know what, I had a real... It was a lovely, lovely time, and then I got this... the double thing that you have to get at the end. I got this thing,
yeah.
And it was a really... It was an amazing night in Lakeside. Is that what it's called, Lakeside?
Yeah, I don't really know much about
dance. And then, but around the hotel, like, we'd go in, and people were just like, yeah, clapping. I mean, I had to change my flight, because I had to play another game. I wanted to go on holiday.
Did you beat Bob Mortimer?
Bob Mortimer, who came out with the best... I don't know if you saw it, but he came out... You have to have, like, a... a costume, you know, be a thing, and he came out dressed as a carpet. And his thing for the audience to sing was, "We hate laminate, we hate laminate." It was my favourite thing. It was so amazing. And I came out as the wedding slinger to some, like, Come on Eileen, and I was so annoyed, because I was like, I don't want to follow We Hate Laminate. It's the best thing. You're not going to get better than We Hate Laminate.
You say in your stand-up that you were a creepy child.
I was a creepy child.
What kind of, how did your creepiness manifest itself?
I was quite an odd kid. I was a compulsive liar. I used to imagine I was a monkey if I was scared. I was a very odd little weirdo. I just make up lies and sort of just kind of creepy, just quite creepy. Not like as I say in my old stand-up, like, not like in a killy way, just a bit odd, just a bit strange. I lived in Ireland for a year. My mum and dad got divorced. Excuse me. And I just had one tape. It was Belinda Carlisle. And I had a Walkman. I had no friends. And I was like six, just before my at seven. And I just walked around, listened to this circles in the sand, round and round. And then there was this English guy who'd moved there, and he tried to open a shop in his garage. But the shop never, I just saw one day he had like boxes of Kit Kats and stuff. And you've got to bear in mind, this sounds really dodgy, like he was a dodgy man, and he wasn't. And I was like, I'll buy something, just because his voice was so comforting, because I was missed home so much. And he was like, well, it's not a shop, but it didn't work. And I was like, but I want to buy a Kit Kat. And he's like, okay. And he sold me a Kit Kat. And then I went there every day and just drove him mad. Like, I'd knock on his door, and his wife would be like, she's here again. And then he was so sweet, he'd go out, open his shop for me until the box of Kit Kats had gone. And I just sit there going, I tell you another thing, and he'd be like, just this lonely child who liked it because he had an English accent.
Oh.
Yeah, very strange child.
That's nice, that's sweet. Could have just given you the Kit Kats.
Yeah, but I think I liked the transaction. Yeah. Otherwise it's just a man giving a kid Kit Kats.
To make them go away, though, that's different. That's the most noble man in the world.
Yeah.
Here, have these sweets and leave.
I just talked to him for literally about 2 hours. Every second day I'd go round and he'd just listen to me.
Aww.
Sweet man.
That's sweet.
Timmy.
I'll do a feature called Des Island Dicks.
Ooh.
It's not what you're thinking.
Oh.
Which eight Richards would you take with you to a desert island? I'm already there.
Okay.
Which island?
Richard Osman.
Oh, yeah, good. We've had a previous guest. Hard, isn't it? It's hard to think of even two or three.
Oh,
no, it's a good question.
Richard the Third.
Yeah, good.
Richard.
Why do you like Richard the Third better than Richard the Second and Richard the First?
Because he's the mad one, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, Richard the First.
Yeah, you need a mad one to make it,
to kill the princes in the tower.
Yeah, you need one of those.
Okay.
Can't all be just happy Richards. what other Richards? I must even know more Richards. Richard.
Well, I'm not going to help you. That's the whole task.
AOD?
Yeah.
Is he Richard?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Richard. Richard
Burton.
Burton. Richard Burton. Richard
Carpenter.
What was that? Richard Carpenter.
There's two Richard Carpenters. There's Richard.
I love the one from the band.
Yeah. One who wrote Catweasel as well. We've had a lot. We talked about him before.
Richard Dawkins.
Yeah.
Is he Richard?
Yep.
It's weird when you say the second name first.
You can tell if they're Richards by when their name is Richard. If they're if their first name's Richard, then they're... Yeah, you can have a second name Richard as well.
Richard, no. Richard
Richard Curtis? Yeah, that's back to C's.
I was on K.
Yeah, you gave up on it.
Richard...
What about EFG? H-I-J?
Richard Harris?
Yeah.
Richard.
Got loads. If only everyone thought of this working through. Trying to sound them out phonetically. Richard Johnson.
You just got to get all your Richards in a bowl and then you can start sifting through them. But you can't. I can't just go. I literally had one Richard that was.
And you've done very well. You've got more Richards than anyone else has managed to get there.
Method to my madness.
Yeah. Have you been on The Apprentice, You're Fired? Have you done that one?
No.
Done because you've done the Great British
yes,
Bake Off.
I did that.
Slice.
I watched the Bake Off. I don't watch The Apprentice.
Okay, because I was asked to do that, and then No, they didn't ask me to do it in the end. No, they put me on the list and didn't ask me. And they got people like you back twice. I'm not holding
on the Bake Off.
Yeah, I'm not holding a grudge.
Do you watch the Bake Off?
Yeah.
They'll get you on it.
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
Well, they've only had one series.
I know, but you get free cakes, don't you?
I did the pilot. I did the pilot that got sort of went out and got. And then I did one show, I think. Did I do one show?
I think you did two. You were very good on it, I have to say. I would have preferred to see you on it than me. Because I don't really like the programme or cakes that much.
So, did you say that to them, Richard?
Do I have to like cakes? Well, I think cakes are ridiculous.
I think the Bake Off is like The Apprentice. I don't watch, and then they offered me, you know, sort of to do The Apprentice, and I was like, that feels sort of, you know, like I've done shit telly, but I was like, I don't want to do a thing where I'm pretending to have watched a show. And whereas the Bake Off, I really do love. I really genuinely get it, and I can't bake. It's literally ridiculous. So I'm just like, I find it, and it's so well shot, and I just love the cutaways to, like, they do that weird lamb, like, for no reason. I'm a massive, massive fan, and a very few of those shows that I like, and that is the one for me that was like, cake is home.
I was going to ask you if you, because I come up with some, Alan Sugar asked for titles for his autobiography. On Twitter.
Right.
I came up with quite a lot of them. I've done most of them before.
Hit me.
Well, I did Firing Blanks. I think that would have been a good one.
That's good.
I think my favourite one is I Remind Me of Me at That Age, because that's... I think that's definitely... Have you got a suggestion for Alan Sugar's autobiography? That is a difficult question.
I need to get Amstrad into a pun. That's what you do if it was an Edinburgh show.
Amstrad, you could do something with him in slave ship.
Amstraddling greatness.
Oh, good. And it could be him as the Colossus of Rhodes.
And he's so, yeah, over an Amstrad.
Yeah. With his cock out in it. It could be in it. Would you be like, could you have sex with an Amstrad email phone? If my wife came and found me inside an Amstrad email phone, do you think she would have any right to be angry about that?
I think she'd be more concerned. That would just be more concerned.
Yeah, email in an inefficient way. That's how I like it. So you wouldn't be upset by that. You would think it was weird, but you wouldn't say, I'm going to divorce you for having your dick in an Amstrad email or phone. That is the same as having sex with a robot. It's exactly the same.
No.
What if I just put like if I got like a blow up woman doll.
Right.
And instead of a vagina, I put an Amstrad email or phone.
Jesus.
And I'm having sex with that. And my wife came home. Would she have any... There'd be no reason for her to be upset about that. I go, look, it's not even a whistle, an Amstrad email, a phone. And even if that wasn't it, it's just like a pouch.
Why do you
it's
need
not,
the fake
it's a pouch.
Woman? Why do you need the fake woman body around it then?
Because that's just, you know, I'm trying to show you that that's what a robot is like, essentially, and that wouldn't be bad.
No,
there'd be nothing embarrassing about my wife coming home, finding me fucking Amstrad email phone with a rubber woman around it.
The rubber woman is the problem.
Well, see, that's the moment when it starts to resemble a woman, female form.
But if
I had 8 Amstrad email phones all stuck together vaguely, and 2 of them were breasts, and 1 of them.
I think that's not as bad because they can't be a woman.
And if there's a wig on, I put a wig on it. I mean, my wife comes home. For me, it's very important that my wife comes home. That's part of it. I'm not enjoying it until my wife comes home. I'm just, that for me is the moment. Oh, I can explain it's not what it looks like. It's not my fashioned 8 Amstrad email the phone. I'm making a point about the future of humanity here. And the moral choices we're going to
have. I think if you put it into a gallery and you did that for like 4 or 5 hours, I think you could win something.
Good, yeah.
And I think you should consider that because I think you just doing that and then every half an hour someone pretending to be your wife walks in. And then you.
Why can't my wife walk in? I'm an old man, I'd be spent too much of that. If it's someone pretending to be my wife, what if it's a robot pretending to be my wife comes in?
No, it won't work. Your speech won't work about the future of humanity, but I think you should definitely put it in a gallery. It's like an M&S. You could definitely get something with that.
An M&S. That's good. Again, above them, they don't even know what you're talking about. Come on, Tracy Emin. If I put some poo on it, it'd be like Chris Ophili.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's the one who puts poo on stuff. or Gilbert and George. They like working in poo. I mean, I would be an. If I was, I'd like to be an artist. I have quite a lot of modern art ideas.
Hit me.
Well, look, I've done them all on here before, but I like by playing myself at snooker in a basement and commentate on it.
That's good.
I think that's like a modern art idea. I could do that in a gallery for 4 hours.
That's a good mental game anyway, to sort of go against. It's a good debating thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I think you'd be good at modern art.
Thank you. I would. I want. I'm going to do it with my daughter's shoes. I want to collect my daughter's shoes throughout her entire life. She'll have to carry on once I'm dead, and then put them in a long, just like in a row.
Oh God, that's very beautiful, yeah. And melancholy.
Yeah, and then it's just empty shoes leading up to every single pair of shoes someone wore in their whole life.
But you know, people have so many shoes.
I know, it's going to be a pain in the ass. It's easy so far. I don't know if because she sometimes wears little socks that have got like shoes drawn on them.
Yeah.
Do they count? I suppose they do.
They do. They're her, you know, her
what
feet
about
covers.
She's got a reindeer outfit that's got like, you know, the shoes are incorporated.
Built
does that
in.
Count as
no,
shoes?
No, I think no. They've got to be the ones, they've got to be the things you just cover the feet with, yeah. Nothing else.
Because otherwise, that's just like a reindeer, an empty baby's reindeer outfit on the floor. Like a
next
baby.
To a pair of Timberlands. What is this?
Do you ever have... Because I think a lot of comedians are working in that kind of arena where it's imagination and where you're having surreal ideas. Do you ever feel like moving into art?
The only thing I was good at school was art. I am a really good drawer. I'm very bad at most things. But it just basically being alive is a struggle for me. But I'm really... But art, I found quite... especially like drawing, like technical even, I'm quite good at.
Yeah.
I'd love... Yeah, I'm into anything that makes you think, and without being pretentious, but stuff like that. I think we're all... Comics, especially, because we're always trying to look for things to give us inspiration. So I think art sort of... It's good to change gears, to have your mind sort of go in a different way, you know.
But in a way, a joke is... the way a joke works is it's two thoughts colliding often, isn't it? That's the way two different things coming together. So there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can't sell our jokes for £500,000.
Maybe if we cover all our jokes in shit.
Yeah.
And just put them in a gallery.
I have tried. Right, well, look, time has flown by. It's been very delightful to talk to you. We have to get ready for next week's show now. So,
it's amazing. Time flies here, doesn't it? A week goes like that.
It's amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, please give me a round of applause to Roisin Connor team, my guest this week. You have been listening to Richard Herring's at the Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Roisin Connerty. The music you're listening to was played by Pest. It was a long time ago. They recorded it. They don't come in every week. That would be stupid. Thanks to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at Go Faster Stripe and Chris Evans. Well done on the Top Gear job, Chris. We were very excited. What? Oh, it's not that. It's not that one. Apparently, it's not that one. Our one doesn't ever get his cock out and put it on your shoulder. That just never happens with our one. The producer was Ben Walker. This is a fuzz. GoFasterStripe.com and Sky Potato Production. Thanks for listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. It was quite good, wasn't it? I don't know. It has. I'm doing this before it was recorded, so I don't know if it was a good one or not. I bet it was. That's my guess. So if you've enjoyed these, why not come and see me at the Leicester Square Theatre in August and September, or I'll be on tour with the show Happy Now or all through 2016 in the spring. Check richardherring.com/gigs for all the details for that, or buy a badge at gofasterstripe.com/badges or a DVD at gofasterstripe.com. Here are some of the people who have helped us bring this podcast to you this week, and I am very grateful to them all. Matthew Smith, Ewan Duncan, Rob Applin, Darren Foote, Colin Anderson, Raymond Harpany, Kevin Tipcorn, Steve Mash, Dean Ratland, Gaynor Wilson, Adam Queck, Stuart Fawcett, Tim Turner, Julian Benton, Thomas Baldwin, Lauren Pilkington, Matthew Blackburn, Neil Martin, Jack Burton, Fraser Levy, Gina Lynn, Paul Jeffrey, Rob Ward, Robert Tang Richardson, Leo Vigoda, Carol Forster, Icky Kawa, Colm McGonagall, Aurora Watters, Jake, Heather Henderson, Simon Carl, Christine Sato, David Collier, Jijin John, Roy Owens, Matthew Poynton, and John Columby, Matthew Robotham, come on, Martin Bryant, Colin Jackson, Michael O'Connell, Gareth Gamble, Paul Kavanagh, Simon, Jordan Lepert, very important, he hates being called, or she hates being called Lepert. He hates he being called a she, or she hates being called a he as well, probably. And Ian Matthews, thank you all, you are the best.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.